Hello and welcome once again to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on, it's a dreary, nasty day out there, huh? As you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. It may be nasty outside. It's nice and warm and toasty inside. Intelligent people. We're going to talk about some interesting things here on the Arts Magazine Show today. Glad you could join us. Hope you'll stick around to the end of the show. In the first part of the show, we're going to talk with the Black Repertory Theater of Kansas City, Damron Russell Armstrong, the Executive Artistic Director, will be here. Then we're going to follow it up in the second half. We're going to have The Living Room will be on. They're going to talk about the Ron Simonian play, Trigger Happy, and Ron is scheduled to be here. I haven't seen Ron in person, at least, for a long time. And with him, if all works out, Mark Robbins, longtime Kansas City actor, will be here, and he's going to talk about the play Trigger Happy, another play by Ron Simonian, right here in Kansas City today. But first, let's turn to my guest. Damron Russell Armstrong is with us.
Good morning, Michael.
He is the Executive Artistic Director of the new Black Repertory Theater of Kansas City. It's always hard starting something from scratch. We know that. And he is with us to talk about their new musical comedy, Five Guys Named Mo, not the Stooges.
Which it could be confused with.
Yeah, well, you're performing up at the Arts Asylum.
Yes, newly renovated Arts Asylum.
How did they change it? It was kind of a big room. I thought it used to be a church. It looked like
to
me.
And so with having the history of being a church, it was very echoey once you took out all of the pews and the rest of the accoutrement. But what they did, we sat down with them. They facilitated a meeting with the Black Rep because they wanted to approach their board with a capital campaign to do some renovations on the place. And their board really wanted to know that there was a company that would come in and bring folks to the area. And so when we sat down with them and they discussed the type of renovations in several phases that they wanted to do, my board said, if that is the direction that they're going, our mission statements are pretty similar. So it sounds like a good match, certainly for this, our inaugural season.
Yeah. Well, this is your inaugural season. It's not your first play. You've had a couple before this.
Yes, this is the fourth show in our cycle during our inaugural season. We opened with the Dream Girls. We did a MTH-style book-in-hand reading of the show, with wonderful performances. Sean Ruffin, who's now all over town, is not only the assistant director on Five Guys Named Mo, but was the lead role, Effie White, in Dreamgirls. Shameless plug for her. She's in Elephant and Piggy at the Coterie. If you want to go see her live.
Sure, but you've worked at the Children's Theater, too.
Saw
you at Theater for Young America. You even went to New York for a while.
Oh, yeah. I got a really great education here in Kansas City. I think my first job at the Coterie was in 91.
Wow.
If you can believe that.
Oh, I believe it. But I've been around longer than that. You're a young man to me.
After that, systematically worked in most every theater in Kansas City, then moved to New York. And when I came back some 20 years later, found that theater had really exploded in Kansas City your next guests coming up, The Living Room and Heidi Van with The Fish Tank. I mean, there was so much theater happening that Kansas City has really taken note and has become a theater town.
It really has. Well, you wanted to talk about the play first. We'll go back, folks, and talk about the Black Rep in a while. Does that mean that Chris is here? Does that mean Chris is here, Phil? Okay, if Chris is here, bring him in.
Bring him on in.
If it's the living room people, they can wait out there. Because Damron wants to do all the talking himself.
Exactly.
You picked the play. It's a musical comedy. Five Guys Named Mo.
Five Guys Named Mo. And it is in what my vision of what this theater is about. It's unearthing works of art that have not been produced in Kansas City, featuring African-American performers, shows written by African-Americans. I just think it's very important because the key mission is to build bridges of understanding. Mm-hmm. And how can we come to any understanding of anyone's contribution unless we know what they are contributing? This show is music. It's featuring the music of Louis Jordan, who most folks will probably know names like Cab Calloway. And this gentleman was a counterpart of theirs and was actually known as the king of the jukebox. He had so many hits. But again, a name that is not familiar to most people that are not jazz enthusiasts. So I thought it was important that we do this show. It's fun. It's silly. It's a really great time.
Well, I'll ask you about the plot. First, I want to introduce our other guest has arrived, Christopher Barksdale Burns.
Yes,
he is talk right into your mic, and I'll do the duty of turning it on for you. Once again, hello, Christopher.
Good morning.
21 years he was with the Kansas City Ballet.
I know.
He made a face. Was that a long time?
I don't know if it's the weather outside or that you mentioned that made his bones kind of ache.
Well, I did, not to talk out of school here, but I heard the rumor that you wound things down over there because of injuries.
No, I was fine, actually. Oh. I was sort of you know, I reached an age where I wasn't getting anything new, and so they were mm-hmm. sort of, okay, well, we don't want to give you court of ballet roles, and we don't really want to hire you back to not do a lot of anything.
Oh,
so,
I see.
So, but I'd been there for 21 years, and so it was time to
move on and do other things. Exactly. One of those things is the Kansas City Black Repertory Theater. Yes. Do you have a long relationship with Damron?
I do. I've known Damron for
don't say it.
Many years. many years.
But I've always loved Christopher because people put the stamp on him of being with the ballet, so he's a ballet dancer.
Yeah,
but he's always been much more than that. I mean, not that that's not a really great thing, because it is, but Christopher's always been this kind of quadruple threat of being able to choreograph your show, being able to sing in your show, being able to act in your show. So it's a no-brainer that any show that we do at the Black Rep, Christopher Barksdale Burns is a part, could be a part of it in some way.
Oh, sure. I've seen you at the ballet, of course. I saw you at Dance in the Park.
Yes.
I was doing my MC duties on stage. And
oh, my God.
You appeared
those
there.
Many hot summer evenings.
Yeah.
Well, when did you do Will Rogers Follies?
1992. I left the company in 1992. I joined in 1988, and I left in 1991 to grow up a little, because I'd gone from a ballet school to a ballet company and hadn't really gotten outside of those things. So I went away, and I moved up pretty quickly in the company. I think that was sort of on the people who had been there. I was sort of on there kind of like, how did he do this? And I didn't really get along and vibe with them. So I left, and I was gone for about a year and a half, and I came back and kind of, hey, this is much better now that I'm an adult, you know.
Oh.
And then I left again and did a workshop of Thoroughly Modern Millie that I ended up on Broadway with, and then toured with that. So then I came back and finished college and, and things, and grew up and finished a career here, and not finished, but retired from one career, and still trying to move around.
Well, tell me about Five Guys Named Mo. I guess it involves, do you dance in the show?
I do. I am Nomo. I do a little tap dance, just a little bit of a tap dance. But it's fun, and I got to work with dancers and non-dancers. And it's fun to see what people bring when they think, he's going to make me dance. And it's like, no, I'm just going to give you a blueprint and see what your body does to it. Because, you know, we're not all going to look alike.
Well, and it's a pretty amazing thing, because I was mentioning last night when they were running through dance numbers, and one of the cast members said, hey, remember when we didn't know this dance? Because now it's just a part of their muscle memory. Mm-hmm. And so that's a beautiful thing to do, especially for it. to see non-dancers get to that point.
So you're saying they automatically go into
it? Under the watchful hands of Christopher Barzio Burns.
I haven't gotten to watch it yet. I sent him out to the audience and say, are we doing the same thing?
Yes. And they are.
But well, I guess if you're on stage as well as choreo, I guess you don't really see it. I guess you'd have to watch a video, I guess.
Yeah. I saw it in the mirror when we were downstairs at the Arts Asylum in their rehearsal studio, and I was like, oh, these boys are getting it. And then when you get away from the mirrors, that's when it, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. But, you know, that happens in professional ballet companies. It happens in musical theater shows. When you turn away from the mirror, people are like, oh, my God, what is this stuff?
I don't know my left and my right all of a sudden.
Exactly.
Sure. So. Oh, sure, yeah. Well, let's talk about the show. There's a plot line, I'm sure.
There's a bit of a plot
You're
line.
You're no Max. Christopher said he was no Mo.
Yes.
Because the title is Five Guys Named Mo.
It's the challenge of jukebox musicals, because generally the concept is, oh, we have this amazing music. Let's put a show to that. Let's have standalone, separate songs that we want to consolidate and put into one group, one evening. Of theater. And you saw that with Mamma Mia. What's the Valley? Frankie Valley?
Jersey Boys.
Oh, okay. And Jersey Boys probably is the best example of a really well-done jukebox musical, because it dealt with Frankie Valley's life. And so there's a really rich story there. For this one, however, you really should come for the music. It's a really great, because Louis Jordan's music is featured in the show, and it is amazing music. So it's a really good, feel-good show. Most people who left Mamma Mia said, ooh, I don't know about that story, but I love ABBA. Mm-hmm. So by the end of it, whether you follow the story or not, you were singing Dancing Queen with everybody else when you were leaving the theater. But this story, you meet Nomax at the beginning of the story, who has girlfriend has left him because he is not a
inconsiderate.
He's very inconsiderate of her feelings, and so she lets him know and walks out on him, and who you don't see in the play, but then in his drunken binge, the five guys named Mo emerge to basically become the ghost of Christmas past, the ghost of Christmas future, to take him on a musical journey to help him better understand how to act in a relationship and just act as a person.
Good. Yeah. Well, I know you got a good review from Alan Portner.
Yes.
He sent it to me. I know him.
Alan is great. Alan is a great supporter of what we're trying to do. And it's important in this fledgling stage to get that kind of support all over town, because we're new, because we don't have the funding secured that is necessary to have a complete operational group of folks that are working in an office every day to make sure.
It's all him.
I walk around saying that I wear all the hats, and the cast has come to know me as Tess and Charles, and because Tess is the laundress, and Charles is the guy who is the set. Who's the set constructor, because I'm wearing all of those hats now at the moment, and we hope that eventually we will get the kind of backing that is unavailable to companies like ours at this point.
I heard you say that earlier. They want you to have a track record of several years before they'll consider making a donation?
Yes, at least three to five years to those foundations in town that can give you the substantial gifts. Now, we have been blessed with funding from the Black Fund and several private organizations.
The GoFundMe page.
And Kansas Cityans really enjoyed the arts and give like nobody's business. This entire season basically was funded by individuals, which is a really great thing, but there's only so many times that you can return to the till. Because there's so many theaters, and people are not only gifters when it comes to theater, but in general. There's so many think Kansas City has more money going to AIDS research than any other place in the country, and that money stays here in Kansas City. And there's so many other Susan B. Coleman. I mean, you can just go down the list of things, organizations in Kansas City that are being supported by Kansas City.
And because there's so many companies in town, as you said earlier, that's stretched even further, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So when I hear young people, no matter what background you're from, say, oh, there's nothing to do in Kansas City, I get very frustrated because there's not only the Black Repertory Theater, there's Kansas City Repertory Theater, there's the Unicorn, there's the Met, there's the Kansas City Ballet, the Symphony. You have one of the top 10 museums in the country here in Kansas City. You have a performing arts center. There's always something to do in Kansas City. And if you're not looking for it, then you're not very observant of your community, and you should be. And Kansas City consists more of than the first Fridays that the young people from all over go down and have wine and walk around and look at art. That's amazing that that's happening now, but we need to branch that out to not only that, but to move those people into the different art forms and around the community, because we want to a good second season, not as, you know, we want the second season and the third season to be just as big or bigger. And then finally, when we're on our own feet, on 2 feet, then mounted productions where, you know, poor Dameron isn't up in the middle of the night cutting out sets and like ironing shirts and sewing on buttons, you know. Yeah. So,
no, but those are tedious things, but they're important, aren't they?
They're very important things. And for it's the unglamorous things that most people don't see. Because when you see theater, you see it in its finished product. And that is amazing, and that is what draws people to give. Operational funding really isn't quite that sexy. Who's stapling papers in the office or who is, but it takes the person calling the folks who hold the rights. It takes the person who sends out the checks. It takes the person that plans the season. It takes the person who makes the copies of the script. I mean, there's so many unsung heroes when it comes to theater companies that you don't see because they're all relegated to an office. Mm-hmm. But they are as important as the lead player in the show.
We're talking with Christopher Barksdale Burns, and a performer in the show.
Yes, sir.
And also a 21-year performer with the Kansas City Ballet and other companies, as he told us about. And Dameron Russell Armstrong, the executive artistic director who plays the role of Nomax in the show. Christopher, at least no Mo.
And there's Eat Mo.
Eat Mo, who's
Four-Eyed Mo.
Rodney Thompson. Four-Eyed Mo is Nathaniel Rasson. Big Mo is Douglas Walker.
And Little Mo.
And Little Mo. Francisco Pancho Villegas.
Well, that's, you covered all five in the Kansas City Black Repertory Theater show, Five Guys Named Mo, running still yet this weekend, Thursday, April 6th at 7:30, Friday, April 7th, 7:30, Saturday, the 8th at 7:30, a matinee on Sunday, the 9th at 3 o'clock at the Arts Asylum. I can't say new because I've seen shows there going back years.
Yeah.
1000 East 9th Street. The number to call for more information. This is a number you gave me. It's not your personal number.
No.
Someone's not going to just call you at 3 in the morning and ask about
he'll
the show.
He'll be up. I mean, he'll
it will be transferred to me at that
hour. Ironing.
816-663-9966.
That is correct.
That's the number to call or online at brtkc.org. We're speaking with Dameron and Christopher about the show. What should we give directions maybe to the Arts Asylum if they haven't been there?
I just want to point out that you can secure guaranteed seating on the website www.brtkc.org, and you can also purchase tickets at the door. And the reason I mention that is because at the door you can get the $25 senior discount.
We're not supposed to talk about prices. Ooh. So you didn't hear that.
You didn't hear that.
You can get tickets. We apologize for that. Dameron knows this. He's been on here before. But you can get tickets at the door.
Yeah, tickets at the door for seniors and for students as well as artists at the door. Well, and I'd be completely remiss if I did not mention that Pam Watson is the musical director of the show and has put together the most amazing band in town for the show. So those who are theater lovers, those who are music lovers, will enjoy the show.
So is it difficult for them to play jukebox style?
No, because this music is of the 30s. So any jazz enthusiast will know Louis Jordan. Songs like Caledonia, Ain't Nobody Here But Us Chickens.
Let the Good Times Roll.
There are so many songs in this show that once you come and see it, you go, oh, I didn't know he wrote these songs.
Oh, sure.
But you will know the songs.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of songs, but they're well-known songs. I looked over the list of songs, they were songs I was familiar with.
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily connect it with this show. I guess they weren't done to specifically be in this show,
no,
but they are in this
yeah,
show.
No, yeah, no, again, they were popular songs of the 1930s. Yeah. So, again, anybody who enjoys live music will enjoy the show.
Yeah. Well, we've covered a lot of things. Anything, like the idea you had to start this, I guess that you visited other Black Repertory Theaters, maybe the one in St. Louis, was it?
Oh, yes. I've been to St. Louis Black Rep for going there for a number of years, and also all over the country. And towns, cities as smaller than Kansas City actually had Black theater groups. And I've always wondered why a city as large as Kansas City did not have one. Certainly if St. Louis had one, we should certainly have one because the demographic was similar. And instead of waiting for someone to shine in the spotlight on African American works, I don't know why I'm waiting for it when I have the ability to do that. And it's, again, all about building bridges. You can't really appreciate your fellow man unless you know something about your fellow man. And celebrating the differences. We all enjoy going to enrichment festivals because from tent to tent, you get to taste the food of a different place. You get to see the beautiful tapestry of another place. And that is how we enjoy one another, by learning about one another. So even for young African Americans, it means they now have a sense of who came before them and whose shoulders they're standing on. For non-African Americans, it's another sense of, I now understand more about how you contribute to the community in which I live. One of my favorite examples is that of, we talk about Thomas Edison, and with good reason. He was an incredible inventor, but he created the light bulb. But in that same breath, the conversation should also mention Louis Latimer, who was the African-American who invented the filament to allow the light bulb to last longer than a day. This is what one man did. This is what the other man did. See what they did together.
Sure.
In this climate of separatism, it's really important that we understand now more than ever before how well we work when we work together.
How far ahead are you thinking? You have shows planned for maybe the rest of this calendar year, maybe into...
Well, this is the final show of the inaugural season. Our next two projects are all student-driven. We're taking our educational component that we've worked with students for this past year, turning their writings into a Fringe Festival show. We have KCK Kids Got Talent that we're doing a two-week camp with those students over there, and hopefully, knock on wood, given the right support and funding, we will return in September with Charles Fuller's A Soldier's Story.
Is that scheduled to be at the Arts Asylum?
Yes,
as well?
It is.
Yeah, you know, doing things with the Fringe and with the kids and all that. Now that will help raise your profile, and that should help you, I would think.
Exactly.
We're hoping.
Very interesting that this is coming along at such I call it an appropriate time. I sing a lot of jazz music myself, and I was singing a Lena Horne song, and a young Black man came up and said, "Who? That song is great. Who sang that song?" And I said, "Well, it was written by Gershwin, but I do it in the style of Lena Horne." Well, who's Lena Horne? So my heart just sank because we've become so far away from those roots of music and who sang it before and the style in which they sang it. It broke my heart. But this educational component, I also like that he's giving the kids a chance to do playwriting, mm-hmm. so that they have their own voice and they get to say, you write what you see and what you're dealing with in your life. And this is a way for these kids to get this out of themselves and onto paper and maybe, you know, find out that their stories are all similar. And if they're all similar, what is the one thing that's good or one thing that's bad? What is holding us back? What can we do together to all leapfrog to the next section of our life and miss something that could be bad for us or something that could lead to us being in the wrong place at the right time. Mm-hmm. So what can we do to help each other? And by putting that on paper and exposing it with to other people, it's going to teach those kids a great deal of what's happening with the world, and it's going to make them more empathetic and apathetic.
I think it will. Of course, it's generational. Exactly. We all realize that. If you say Beyonce or Jay-Z, they will know.
They know, right? Yeah, exactly. Right.
Of course.
But then I'm like,
The show is called Five Guys Named Mo. It's a musical comedy. It's a presentation of the Black Repertory Theater of Kansas City. Four more performances, April the 6th, this Thursday, 7:30, Friday the 7th, at 7:30, Saturday the 8th at 7:30, and Sunday the 9th at 3 o'clock p.m. a matinee at the Arts Asylum of Kansas City, 1000 East 9th Street. The zip code, if you need a MapQuest, 64106. The website to go to, brtkc.org. You can make arrangements there if you choose, and or you can call. The number is it's a Damrosch number. don't want to disturb him. Be careful when you call. 816-663-9966. He's a busy man these days. It might take him a bit to get back to you, but he would love to tell you about Five Guys Named Mo, a presentation of the Black Repertory Theater of Kansas City. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you, Michael.
Tell us about the group and the show. Look forward to seeing more of you in the future.
Excellent.
When you do shows, you need to do book interviews with the show.
I'll be back.
Okay. Glad to have you. Damron Russell Armstrong, the Executive Artistic Director of the Black Repertory Theater of Kansas City. He plays the role of Nomax in the show. He's been at many theaters here around town, even New York, Theater for Young America in New York as well, as I said, and Christopher Barksdale Burns, 21 years with the Kansas City Repertory Theater, the First National Touring Company, on Broadway, on tour, L.A. Opera,
Royal Opera of New Zealand.
Royal Opera of New Zealand. Wow, that must have been an exciting trip. We'll hear about that another time.
Yes.
Wind things down. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Performances continue this Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for Five Guys Named Mo at the Arts Asylum of Kansas City. Thanks so much for being with us. We're going to take a short break. When we return, we're going to hear about the Comfy Cozy Living Room Theater and their show. Oh, trigger happy.
Yeah. Go see it.
You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We're going to journey over to the Comfy Cozy Living Room Theater. I say that because I saw a show there. There was one show in the main part, and there was another scene of the show was upstairs, and they kind of moved it around. So in some ways, it truly is a living room over at the living room.
It's comfortable.
It is cozy.
And we have two of the big names in Kansas City theater. Ron Simonian is with us. He's a playwright, performs once in a while. I've seen him on stage once in a while.
I'll never do it again.
Yeah. No, you need to do it again. Some great plays Ron's mentioned. Let me just mention a few names. Thanatos, Bagheads. What was the one? Well, there's a lot of talk in the news about intelligence agencies these days. And then Ron created an agency above all the other agencies. I remember that.
And Mark was in that one. It was Zone 3.
Zone 3, that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, what if all those conspiracy theories were really true?
That's right.
Yeah.
It was the only play that Abe Vigoda has ever been mentioned in.
Indeed. That was a good time.
And there
good
was time. One, too. You did it kind of an off Broadway place. And I guess the theme was the family that hunts together, stays together. Something
right.
like that. That was my favorite, actually.
And that turned into a play called Next of Kin.
Next
and
of Kin.
It was at the Unicorn, and Mark directed that one. That's kind of fun. That was a great, yeah, I loved that
show. And
you've
directed even, and you've written even more than that. How many have you written altogether?
I've written about 60 plays,
wow.
But I'd say about 30 of them are performable. A lot of them are in the scrap heap where you don't throw them away, but you pull little pieces from it for other shows if you find a spot for it.
Well, in Thanatos, at least in my mind, you were talking about the Hyatt disaster.
Yeah, that was definitely an influence.
In that. And in Bagheads, was kind of exploring the dark side of all of our psyches, and we all have that, whether we admit it or not. But you always come up with a really interesting theme. Now, in Trigger Happy, where you have Mark Robbins, who's sitting right next to you right now, Mark has a long theatrical career in Kansas City with The Rep, with Actors Theater, which he is a founding member of, the Shakespeare Festival, many other places around town. But now you get to see him at the Living Room, probably for a little lesser price than you would have seen him at some of these other locations.
Oh, I don't get into that side. I don't work on ticket price.
Sure. But I'm sure it was Ron and maybe some of the others in the cast. I mean, you had Scott Cordes. It's a great publicity picture, folks. You have to go to the website and see it. There's Mark and there's Scott nose to nose.
Oh, it's a great.
And my
great
thought
piece.
Was, Robbins Cordes, the SmackDown. You know, that's what I'm thinking.
I mean, yeah, you get two actors of that caliber in this town, and it's just them. There's no one else up there with them. And it's a battle. I mean, it's fun. It's fun to watch.
I've heard others say, gutsy acting from either of those two.
Yeah. Oh, my
gosh.
Gutsy
acting, yeah.
We got two of the best. I mean, that's one thing. I've been fortunate, more than anyone I've known as a local playwright to end up working with such talented cast members. And Mark Robbins, he's my hero. And it's not no joke. I don't even pretend not to say that. It's like, I don't care. He is. He's the best. And to have him and then Scott Cordes. Remember, Scott Cordes directed Thanatos down at a warehouse
That's
in
true.
1990 when
That's
I first
true.
Met Scott. Yeah. And I mean, these are people who I've gone way back with, and it's an honor to work with them on this. So I'm excited.
It really
That's
is.
That's true for everybody involved. I mean, it's a really nurturing, relaxed sort of process, because we do all know each other so well and for so many years, and we've worked with each other on so many projects that there's a shorthand that goes on. There's a comfort in an ease, and just enhances it opens the doors to creativity that might otherwise be shut down.
Well, at one point, you had to have seen the script. I'm sure at your level, you want to see the script before you do it. And you read this script. What attracted you to it?
Immediately. Well, the fact that I love, Ron has a voice like no other. And it's always just fun to open it up and see what he's up to now.
No. What's going on in that mind?
I don't even want to think about that. just the stuff that's on the page. I don't want to know the fever dreams. I don't want to know the psychoses. The cool thing about it was that it was a kind of a departure, it seemed to me, from his other stuff. One, there are no corpses. There is no dead body on or off stage anywhere, as far as we know. There is a bathroom. There might be. Who knows what's in there? But also, it was more of a classic sort of dialectic. Just two opposing points of view, hashing it out. It's further enhanced and complicated by the fact that he's written these two people as being childhood best friends. And this is, later in their lives that they're having this melee.
Sure.
And there's a crisis, that they needed that frames the whole movement of the play and puts them together in this room to do what they do, what they've done for years, but they haven't done lately, but it's long overdue. This sort of a fight, I think, is long overdue in their lives.
Well, tell us, Ron. It's an issue. People struggle with the issue. And here you have best friends. Was this written by, any friends of yours? you might have had differences with on various issues. Yeah, you often do this in your shows, even in Bagheads, for instance. At times you felt sympathy for the individual.
Yeah, I didn't really pull a lot of my life from Baghead since it was about cannibalism.
I wasn't going to give that away unless it should come back.
but no, I know what you mean. Whereas, like, what inspired you to? Yeah. With this one, it was just watching the news for the last few years and seeing the political correctness debate hit academia so hard and watching these opposing viewpoints. And this play is not about the election or any of that stuff, but if you look at what's happened, the way people communicate, we've kind of evolved into this society that if you have your opinion and the other person has their opinion, if you don't agree, well, then we basically unfriend you on Facebook and you're no longer in existence in my life. We're not going to debate anymore. And ideas just get stifled that way. And what this play hopes to do is kind of open the door of debate and keep things alive. Because if you want to change the world, you have to sometimes change people who don't agree with you. And the only way you can change their mind is to communicate with them. If you shut them down and we destroy the First Amendment, like I see happening, and as a writer, that's a huge issue to me. And I'm sure as a journalist, it's important to you. And when we see the opportunity for discourse thrown out the window, we're all in big trouble.
We are. Yeah, we have to learn to listen, and even if we don't agree, just take that into consideration.
Right. Raise your argument, not your voice.
That's right.
You know, you don't have to yell, but we could come up with more. You know, I've learned a lot from both sides of this play. And writing it, my goal was to take a conservative voice at its best level and a liberal voice at the best arguments and level that are going on. And when they clash, they're professors, you know, in this play dealing in about a crisis at a university that's been started. But
it's not exactly Buckley and Vidal, but close.
But it's definitely hitting all the issues of today from an extreme side. But in theater, I've often found, and I'm a very liberal person, and I can't ignore the conservative viewpoint if I want to try and change somebody's mind, and likewise them with me. And I've learned a lot from the conservative side of this play because I did a lot of research on this show to try and come up. Like, I read a lot of student newspapers across the country, and what were the hot topics? What was being debated? What was happening? And I've found basically that if we can listen to the other side, we can find that we become more educated. Also, if we're going to change their mind, if they listen to us, you find these two characters kind of molding. And this one, they're kind of a little stubborn, but it gives us the chance as an audience to make up some discussions and have some conversation, because I don't want to answer the question in the play. I like to ask the question.
It's better, I think, that you do that.
Yeah.
You leave that open for both sides to enjoy the presentation.
You know, that's another thing that really appealed to me about this play. It just reminded me that for the last several years, I've realized that being in the theater, I'm surrounded. All of my circle, all of my immediate social circle is generally left-leaning, is liberal. And I'm conscious of the fact that I don't want to be. I have to fight against allowing myself to be in that bubble, and I've been craving. I wish I had more friends who were conservative. I wish, or you know, failing that, I wish I had. I wish I had reliable access to reliable conservative sources of news or discussion. You know, that weren't just jingoistic or polemic. You know, just hard right. That's been a real craving that I've been having in my life. My brain wants that. Mm-hmm. And this play kind of satisfies that to a certain extent. So on a personal level, that's why this play appeals to me.
Maybe Ron wouldn't want me to get into it, but are you the more liberal professor, or are you the more conservative professor?
What do you think?
I would guess more liberal professor.
You're wrong.
Say it.
No. I get to be Richard III in this one. He's not an evil genius by any means. He's just a very committed conservative guy, and I love being able to carry that viewpoint on stage and embody it because a lot of what he says resonates very strongly, and hopefully it has that effect on the audience too, because I think theater audiences are largely skewed to to the left.
Probably.
And I think it's a great opportunity for to have these people in the audience at various points during the evening say, I don't like that guy, but I understand. I get what he's saying. You know, it's making sense to me. What's happening? What's wrong with me? Why is this making sense?
Well, just being exposed to the different thoughts. I mean, you don't have to buy into all of them.
No.
And listen and consider.
Right, right. Our Constitution says you don't have to buy into anything.
No, you
don't.
Any
of that stuff. You can have your own opinion and say it out loud in front of everybody else.
And so they have, you have the right to speak. They have the right not to pay any attention if
right.
they don't want to. But you have the right to speak.
Right.
Ron has the ability, the right to write.
And hope someone will speak.
Well, the show is called Trigger Happy. You can guess now what it's about. And it is running, I have April 5th, which is this Wednesday. And it runs through Sunday the 16th, so it's basically a Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, then a Sunday matinee, evening performances on the other nights. Then again, next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The last Sunday is not a matinee. It's an 8 o'clock p.m. evening performance.
That'll be good.
At the Living Room Theater, right in the Crossroads area, 1818 McGee. If you need to MapQuest things, the zip code is 64108. The website, thelivingroomtheaterkc.com, and the number to call, this isn't anyone's personal number, it's the living room's number.
I believe so.
833-816-533-5857, if we've sparked any interest in seeing it. The living room is in the Crossroads area of Kansas City. Why the living room? Did that setting appeal to you?
That's a good question. You know, what the living room has done... this is my first dealings with them. I'm the resident playwright there for the time being until they kick me out, and which I hope they won't do. But they're very much a playwright's theater, and they are really promoting Kansas City theater. They're looking for Kansas City, you know, playwrights, actors. They're putting the local people first. And, you know, a lot of people talk about that in Kansas City. We want to make it a theater town. And Rusty Sneary, the artistic director, in his speech, like before the show, when the turn off your cell phones and stuff, has said some things that just really hit me, that for Kansas City to become a theater town, we really do need to have these 75-seat theaters and such filled with people watching shows by Kansas City writers, Kansas City actors and directors, and make this the home rather than importing shows from, you know, every other major city in the country. And we'll get there. And he's doing a great job at the living room. He and Shauna just making this thing a great place for Kansas City talent to have a chance to be expressed. And it's wonderful. It's really cool.
Was this one of the situations where you had the reading... Because I saw your name in connection with some readings that were.
Well, I wrote five plays to for the living room to do as a reading series for their writer's den, and this was one of those shows. And then Rusty ended up saying, "Hey, we'd like to put it in this season," and I thought that was a great idea. I mean, the one thing also is this show. It's topical now. It's in, you know, things about the news today.
Oh,
but
yes.
I think this would last beyond today because these are issues that were going around when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it would, but there was a sense of urgency to me to have this play done now. And they had the opening, and that was really exciting. And I'm glad they took the risk to, because it is a risk, you know, to put
sure.
a play like this. And they weren't afraid of it at all. And
I wouldn't think they would be.
No, they do some pretty cool stuff down there. It's a great, great theater. And it's my first experience has just been a great experience.
Things that are controversial or attract interest.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
And a place like the living room would like to attract interest, I think.
Yeah, and it's attracting that interest where you're not afraid of anything. And that's what's kind of nice is because, you know, you can attract interest through commercialism, too. You mm-hmm. know, do something that's really hot and
but
popular.
A lot of places can't afford.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you could put up anything. It doesn't have to be famous yet. All you have to do is say, you know, we're going to dance around and sing a song and people will line up. But the living room, they're kind of like, well, let's do something a little edgy and then we'll do a dancing, sing a song the next show.
Yeah.
You know, but they will take the risk. And
oh,
it's
sure.
really nice to see. And that's one thing, what Mark talked about with the liberal kind of crowds in theater. I had always thought this play, in my head I envisioned every other line, someone going, ooh, ah, ooh. Like, if you're a conservative guy, oh, get him. And then the liberal, oh, no. But when you have that liberal audience, there were so many times on Saturday where the audiences gasped.
Oh, really?
In unison. And it made my day.
Didn't care for what Mark's character had to say.
What's so funny is afterwards they did. Huh. Is they came up to me afterwards and they were like, I was shocked that when I heard that, because I've never heard anyone say that, because they're kind of like in that bubble he was talking about where we don't really hear anybody else's stuff. And then all of a sudden it started to make a little more sense. However, it's not that it's appropriate, because there is a retaliation to everything he says, and everything he says he retaliates. You know, it's even, and that's what was important, because a lot of theater, they don't tend to be too even. The conservative voice tends to be silenced a lot in theater. Uh-huh. Not that it's a voice that maybe I love, but freedom of speech protects that speech I disagree with as much as the speech I agree with, in my opinion. You know, and you want to have both voices represented. But it was just really interesting to see those people just kind of, when Mark would say some things, it would just, oh. Just, they were like, oh, you can't talk about, oh, wait, that made sense. And it was just fun to kind of watch the whole thing transpire. And that's what I meant by risk, because I kept thinking, if they have an intermission, we're going to lose half the crowd. And no, they all came back. It's almost like more people came back after intermission, like they grabbed someone off the street, like, you got to come and see this.
Oh, they've got it. They've got to see the end.
Yes, absolutely. It's a
well,
good ending.
They could leave, but they'd be might be missing something, and they have
right.
to be thinking
your yet. Goal is that you hope they come back.
Simonian plays often have a surprise at the end. Does this one have one as well?
You know, I think in my head it makes total sense straight through. But yeah, I'd say there's a lot of twists. I think there's little directions that it'll take that you don't expect, but I think that's the goal, because, you know, when you're not answering the question, like we said earlier, you'll tend to have some paths that they think are going to find a conclusion that might not, but we take it to a different area and ask another, you know, open up another thought for you. So there's a lot of twists and turns. It's not quite like The Crying Game.
Oh, well,
it's going to shock you like that at the ending. But at the end of this, you might end up saying, oh, that makes total sense.
Sure.
Yeah, and it's not just two guys hammering at each other for an hour and a half either. I mean, what the cool thing Ron has done is made them long-time friends from childhood. And so there's also that dynamic of these two people really care about it, who really care about each other, working toward trying to keep the friendship intact. You know, so there's that imperative working on them as well as trying to convince the other one of their point of view.
Yeah.
You know, there's that's at risk in the play, and that's a really great.
Well, because you were longtime friends, color. I'm going to assume now that Scott's character wants to straighten you out.
No, so you'll and be I want to straighten him out.
And you want to straighten him out. Yeah. That's right. But it's for the best of reasons, really, if they're friends. And that's probably the best way to format it that way.
Yeah, I liked it. And also when you add in the structure of they're both professors, but one of them is the department chair. And Scott's character is in charge.
Uh-huh.
So when he's trying to straighten his friend out, he's also politically trying to straighten him out and career-wise trying to straighten him out.
And also trying to be the boss.
And do his job. Yeah.
So he thinks that this might hurt Mark's character's career?
Mike, I think a lot of Mark's choices.
Yeah. Yeah. There are crises aplenty. There's a central crisis involved that has to do with livelihood.
You often take on roles where your characters seem to go off on their own bent. That I've really? more than one time I've noticed that. But you enjoy that, I guess.
Oh, sure. Sure, yeah.
I heard you once say we were discussing something, and I remember you saying, well, that's sort of our job, to make the audience be perplexed and then brought in.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if people leave the theater immediately forgetting about what they've just seen, what's the point? The way Ron writes, I know, and what I would prefer to have happen is that they talk about it on the way home, and it stays in their heads for at least a couple of days.
Okay.
You know, it challenges their perceptions. It makes them think about the human condition, how it affects their lives. It makes them question everything and anything. question their beliefs, question even the most hidebound attitudes that they might have.
Well, that can't be a bad thing. I don't think it can be a bad thing.
I think that's what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Well, Ron often challenges the mind. They're shocking things. There's odd twists. And people say, well, what's going on in that mind of his?
It is confusing in here in my mind sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's why I have to get it out onto a page.
But yeah, I can see where you come up with this concept. I mean, you hear it all the time.
Anyway. Yeah, it's out there. And it's funny how, well, now I have a son who goes to college.
Oh, how old is he by now?
21.
He's in college.
He's in 21. He's 21 at KU. And what's funny is he'll come home or stop by and see me, and he'll tell me about one of his classes, like, you know, the different issues that are happening on his campus. And I just smile and listen and the whole thing because I don't want to, you know, it's his class. But yeah, some of that stuff, yeah. I mean, he's living what I see on the news. And there's a lot of, you know, debate and tension on those university campuses. And it's exciting to kind of see it through him and then also in the theater and try and speak about it.
Oh, sure. Well, the show, Trigger Happy. Talking about guns, of course, gun control, various issues.
Oh, and trigger warnings.
And trigger warnings.
Yeah, that's. I need to make sure that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this is probably my first. There's no gun in this show.
And no dead bodies, as Mark gave away.
Yeah, the triggers in question are an academic
mind.
Thing.
Yeah, in the mind, yeah. Perhaps. What things in our mind trigger?
What was that?
What things in our mind trigger our beliefs in what we have? Sometimes I think we discover. Will this be controversial? I don't care. Sometimes things will set off things that happened maybe in our far distant past. Even our childhood has formulated some of the beliefs we have today.
Absolutely.
And we have to realize that and at times fight against it. Psychologists are falling down now saying, well, why does he think that? Well, that's my own observation, which I'm entitled to have under the First Amendment.
Yes, you are. And you're entitled to tell us all about it.
And testimony to the fact that this is ripped right out of the damn headlines,
is that I
had never heard of the phrase trigger warning as applied to syllabuses or curriculum until maybe 2 years ago. And then I heard a lot about it. And then here's this play.
Well, you might probably heard that during his own career at KU.
Yeah.
Well, those many years ago where you played football, as I recall.
Kind of, yeah. Gave it my best shot.
As well. The play is called Trigger Happy, still yet another play written by, I'm going to say, Kansas City playwright Ron Simonian.
And universal playwright Ron Simonian.
Opens this Wednesday the 5th at 8 o'clock p.m. at the Living Room Theater. Performances continue then Thursday the 6th. Yes, Saturday the 8th, and none on Friday, and that is because I'm sure First Friday will take up all the parking spaces.
Well, we want to make sure everyone can get out there and see all the art and have fun and support the other artists and community.
Oh, it's difficult to find parking spaces on First Fridays. I know from I know from my own experiences. Then a Sunday matinee, I should say, on the 9th at 3 o'clock. Then another week of shows, Wednesday the 12th, Thursday the 13th. Friday the 14th, Saturday the 15th. All of those are 8 o'clock p.m. and a Sunday non-matinee on the 16th at 8 o'clock p.m. at the Living Room Theater of Kansas City, 1818 McGee. The number to call for more information, 816-533-5857, and the website, thelivingroomkc.com. I want to thank you both for being with us today. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. I have lots more questions. I always do.
Well, thank you for having on. Thank you for doing this.
It's nice to see Ron after only hearing about his exploits for the last few years. Show directed, of course, by Rusty Sneary at the Living Room Theater. Trigger Happy, still yet another play by Ron Simonian. The Mind of Simonian contains a lot of things, and this is the latest offering from that. I want to thank you both for being here. Ron Simonian, playwright, Thanatos Bagheads, lots of other shows as well. Mark Robbins, a long career with the Kansas City Rep, Actors Theater, the Heartland Theater, where you played all the roles in the play once, and the, they were all different. That was interesting. And the Shakespeare Festival as well, and many, many other things as well.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Thanks so much for both of you being with us. The Jazz Insider, Sam Weissman is next. He'll be playing jazz from 1 to 3, then the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.